Hello, world. This is Search for Calling, and this is Ken Payne, the number one process executive recruiter in the world, along with my co-host Jay Moore. We're broadcasting out of Tell City, Indiana, which is between Louisville, Kentucky, and Evansville, Indiana, right on the Ohio River. Our show, Search for Calling, is coaching and clearing using the WillTell Solutions profile, a web-based software for connecting kindred spirits in business. As the executive recruiter, put together the WillTell Solutions profile to bring transparency to the staffing industry. Tonight's guest is Karen McCrudden. Karen, how you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
All right. You probably have to speak up a little bit with more intention. You're in Gallipolis, Ohio right
That's
now,
correct.
Right? Yeah, so you're on the Ohio River also.
As well,
All right, so go into a little bit of your background. Let me pull up your resume. You started out at Ford Motor Company?
I did.
Yeah, that's cool. Tell me a little bit about that.
I worked for Ford as a labor relations rep, so I dealt on a daily basis with the employees out on the plant floor. Handling their union grievances, discrepancies with payroll or vacation or attendance policies, anything that came up during the day.
Yeah, cool. So you ended up going to school at Bowling Green State University. You got a Bachelor of Science in Business Administration with a MIS and statistics background?
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about your master's degree.
I got hooked into the HR field, just kind of stumbled into it. I was at a company before that working as a IT tech and got into temporary recruiting for seasonal production. And I got hooked from there, decided that's really what I wanted to do. So I went to graduate school and thought I was going to get a JD MBA degree and decided being an attorney just wasn't what I wanted to do. So I folded it all into an MBA in human resources.
Oh, super. All right, so let's talk a little bit about union. Let's talk about the global economy and the role in human resources. What would you say the biggest challenge the global economy has in specific relationship to union and human resources?
The biggest difficulties we have is as the overall economic picture changes, both companies and the unions have to be proactive in that move. And unfortunately, that's difficult when you have a negotiated collective bargaining agreement sitting in front of you. So you have to sometimes reopen your contract in order to keep both the business and the employees working.
Cool. So you were at Ford Motor Company for about 6 years, and then what ended up happening after Ford?
Unfortunately, that particular plant closed, and they attempted to change it over to another division of Ford, and that didn't work. So they ended up selling it off to a separate customer who is now running it, but not under the Ford Motor Company umbrella.
Oh, cool. So looks like on your resume here, you started your own business after that.
I did. There were some personal things going on that required more of my free time than if I had a structured position with another company, so I just started the business out of my living room. Originally started with just administrative, word processing, bookkeeping type things, headed into HR and benefits consulting for small law firms that were housed in a particular area of downtown Toledo. And filled a niche that wasn't there for these small firms who couldn't afford full-time HR and or administrative people in their offices all the time.
Cool. All right, so you did that for a couple of years and then had some family situations pop up and it was necessary to get back into corporate America?
Yeah, I needed a change from after everything my family had gone through, so I headed back to a more structured environment, starting off with a newspaper group out of Fort Wayne, and then ended up with, and that was as a marketing job there because of the marketing I had done with my own business they kept telling you there'd be an HR job open, so if you please take the marketing first, but the HR never came about. So I went to a major utility in Northwest Indiana, American Electric Power, and there went into their human resources department.
Oh, cool. Good.
I'm sorry?
I said good. All right, so you got into HR that way. And then you went to be a human resources representative in Roanoke, Virginia.
Correct, where I handled construction crews and lineman crews in three counties. So my job was to make sure that all of my employees were taken care of, all of their needs were met, and that meant putting on steel toes and a hard hat and walking out in the fields or the areas where they were either laying new lines for the electric company, repairing what they needed to do, but I was out in the field all the time. And
wow.
From there, yeah, my office became the back seat of my car. But from there, I was promoted down to Shreveport, Louisiana, where I handled power generation plants in three different states. So again, I was working out of my car quite a bit, but there I handled quite a bit more when it came to union as well as benefit administration and staffing. Everything at the Virginia site was pretty stable, whereas things always were changing down in the southwest part of the country.
So you ended up leaving there in August of 2006?
Mm-hmm.
It had a lot to do with the hurricane.
Unfortunately, we lost a third of all of our working facilities in the state of Louisiana, which meant downsizing and outplacement of a lot of employees, including myself. So from there...
Hell of an experience.
It's not something you can plan for. And so all kinds of things were just off the cuff. And we looked at all kinds of opportunities and retraining situations, a lot of outplacement, because unfortunately when we lost all of our electrical facilities, people also lost their houses and families were separated. And so we lost about 970 people.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's destructive. I mean, when I first got a hold of you, you said that one of your slogans in life, or what you're really good at, is managing chaos. Or how do you say that?
Organized chaos.
Organized chaos.
Organized chaos.
Yeah, so you've been driving around using your car as an office, laying line, and, you know, so that's not your average human resources professional, is it?
No, but it's what I thought needed to be done at the time. So my objective is to take care of the people I'm responsible for. And if that means, you know, driving 300 miles out to one of the corners of the county because there's a group of crewmen who are having trouble, that's what it means. It's just, I don't know that I could deal with an 8-to-5 job, going to the same office, going to lunch all the time at the same time every day. I don't know that that's really what I'm looking for.
Yeah. So after that, you ended up going to, that coming out of Shreveport, right? You landed a job at TDS.
Right.
And that has got some chaos in it too, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. When I took the first position with them was in their Norfolk, Virginia plant, knowing that that plant was going to close eventually. We were projected to close in 2010, and instead our customer pulled the plug in August of 2007. So I had about a year at that facility, and my main focus once we found out we were closing 2.5 years early was all of the legal ramifications that go with the plant closing as far as government compliance filing, but also to find these people jobs or education opportunities. And so I spent a full year working on those kind of projects.
Wow. So you ended up closing that plant down, and then what happened?
I was transferred to another facility within their group of plants that they had, and that was in the Chicago area. And I moved to Chicago in August, and unfortunately, in the first 60 days I was there, our customer went down from 3 shifts to 2, and then 6 months later went down from 2 shifts to 1. And at that point in time, they determined, even though we still had employees working, both salaried as well as hourly, and all the same information still needed to be taken care of, they didn't need an HR manager on site. They were going to handle it remotely from a facility about 75 miles away. And once again, unfortunately, I was downsized.
Yeah. So tell me, you've had a lot of experiences in manufacturing and working with unions and taking care of people during times of distress. You still like HR?
I wouldn't do anything else.
Well, tonight, go ahead.
That's where the organized chaos comes in. I love the idea of having 3 things on my to-do list by the time I hit the office in the morning, 2 emails and a phone call later, and I'm completely off in another tangent. But those other 3 things still have to be taken care of. It's always changing. It's never the same thing on the same day. And it's just what really trips my trigger.
Yeah. Don't have any kids. Never been married. So you're the consummate workaholic.
Yeah, one thing I would love to do is to get a dog, but I'm not home enough to have a dog in the house, so we'll get one eventually. I'll have one.
So you've also done a lot of recruiting yourself.
Correct.
There was a time when you went to this one company, you were hiring technical personnel, generally using a recruiter to find them. Average placement fees, roughly about 25%. So if you end up placing the person at that rate, at 25% of whatever the person makes, recruiters are pretty expensive, aren't they?
Yes, they were.
So you had a pretty good idea to go in there and get some college kids on internships. And tell me a little bit about how you managed to pull off this great savings.
I went to the local unemployment / workforce offices at each. I was hiring for 3 different locations. Asked each of those local offices to collect resumes for me or and applications for us for a 7-day period. And then we also listed some jobs in in some newspapers and posted the jobs online. So within 2 weeks or so, we ended up with about 600 applications to hire 27 people. And these were just going to be a massive undertaking. So I called the local college and asked for some human resources majors. I contacted these people, asked them if they were interested in an internship possibility, and I brought 3 of them in for a 2-week period to do phone screens and interviews, pre-interviewing, and also help me with the employment testing to get our initial base of candidates ready to go through the formal interview process at the plant locations.
Okay. Well, the reason why I've asked you to come onto the show tonight, called Search for Calling, is I want to make sure that the audience understands what the show is about. It's about defining our purposes. We can get into life design, and then we get into career modeling, and taking some metrics of the company that I'm recruiting for, talking to the hiring manager there, and profiling that individual, and then going out with that profile and screening candidates to meet the needs. And what I wanted to do tonight with Karen is go over the profile. Tomorrow she's got an interview with the client that I've conducted the profile with, so we're going to see how this works. The profile that I've got, I want to go over this with the audience here. Karen, what I want to do is I want to go ahead and look at the STEM of that profile. And STEM is an acronym for Source, Theory, Energy, Manifestation. I'll say that again. Source theory, energy manifestation. The way I approach recruiting is more the philosophic consulting side. When I say source, I mean to say you are a source of your own life energy. And how your life energy flows from source through the lens, your paradigm, your soul, and how that life energy is then affected by other sources. And all those sources put together create a measurable culture we call a condition, and how that condition then mirrors back and affects you, the sources, your original flow. So this is a mirror effect profile, and it provides both the it provides personal insight and organizational insight for the intentions of executive coaching, clearing, and transparency. It's a pretty powerful profile because it deals with the concept of how you, the source, are creating your condition and how that condition mirrors back and affects your flow. Do you understand that concept?
I do.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So I did one on the general manager, the individual that you're going to be talking with tomorrow. So I've got his profile, and I want to go ahead and conduct your profile tonight, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we're going to get into purposes. And we'll start to get these purposes defined once the profile is over with, okay? All right,
okay.
So just to kind of get the audience up here, Karen, you've got a couple of models in front of you that you drafted out. Got one that is going to look like a wedding cake, and it's got five segments or categories to it. It's got the bottom layer, the middle layer, the top layer, then it's got the icing and the bride and the groom. Those five things we're going to be labeled as A, B, C, D, E, and the bride and the groom is going to be E. And then you also have the big triangle that we have drafted here, and that is going to be talking about your perception, your intention, the condition of where you're at, or where you could possibly go if you're interested in joining this employment condition, and the life energy flows in terms of how people communicate. Well, you follow that?
I do.
Cool. All right, and then you should also have a rectangle that's got 15 windows in it, five on the left, five in the middle, and five on the right.
Correct.
Okay, then you should also have a circle. I call it a coach wheel. And it looks like a wagon wheel with five segments in it, or like a pie with five slices in it. And that there entails stages of life. You got that?
I do.
All right, so what we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and what I want you to do is get an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper.
All right.
And not landscape. What was the other side? Photograph?
Portrait.
Portrait, yeah. So lay it in front of you like a portrait. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I'm going to do before we get into this, now that I want you to get a blank 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper.
I do.
All right, now we're going to go to the STEM model, that Source Theory Energy Manifestation model, and it's basically, we're going to go to the top up there, and it is going to have five segments in it. In that first triangle, it's going to be perception. Now, the
got
very
it.
Top one, it says knowing. You got that?
Yes.
In that first segment, imagine that you're the viewer looking down on that, your divine active intelligence. You, the spiritual aspect, you, the authentic self. And the first thing
right.
you do is you view. Okay? So we're going to get into a little bit of Shakespeare here, like to be or not to be. Okay? But as soon as we are engaged in here in the world of motion, in the physics of things, we get into action. That would be like action by knowing or now we've just gone from, it's a bit of a fall, from be down to being. Did you catch that? From be down to being, which means action. And if you want to know something, get into action and you'll find out. You'll know it. You understand that?
Yes.
It's really simple stuff. But that's the divine act of intelligence. That's you, the spark of divinity. Okay? That
okay.
spark is moving. Okay. Beneath that one, it says permeate, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah, permeation. Okay, that's another way of knowing. It's a little slower, but it involves the aspect of perception as it pertains to imagination and emotion. Got that?
Yes.
Yeah, imagination and emotion is a very high level of your perception. It involves the soul. So let's simplify some of these concepts. Imagine that right at the tip of the triangle, in above it, is this battery. Okay? The potential of all potentiality. Some people want to call it God. Some people want to call it the universe or the infinite. You got that?
Mm-hmm.
So looking at the word infinite or infinity, it's like the potential of all potentiality. So the knowing or the being is that spark. We're going to have you get a mental image of you being a bulb connected to a battery. You can't see the batteries behind you, okay?
Okay.
You got that concept?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You're the viewer, you're the bulb, and you got a battery behind you, but you can't see it. Is that cool?
Yep.
Yeah, it's infinity. That's potential. All right. Then you go down into that second level, and that is going to say imagination and emotion, or permeate to know. Okay? And that's going to be the lens. So now we've got something that kind of looks like a flashlight, if you will. You, the viewer, the bulb, flowing your life energy, which is your essence. We refer to it as dynamis, the Greek word for life energy. It flows from knowing the bulb right to the lens of that imagination and motion. You see that model?
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine? All right, so you imagine that model. Then the third level of perception is looking to know. In other words, you can flow without looking. You got that?
Yes.
Yeah, you're constantly flowing as long as you're being. Then it goes through that lens, the second level. Then it goes into what's called looking to know. This is not even solid yet. This is at logics. Logics can turn things into yes and no and black and white and right and wrong. Pure logic, study of logic, would be induct and deduct. So, you know, Sherlock Holmes says, you know, he deduced it, right? Deduction means you start from a general of the past, and you contract it or deduce it down into specific now. Inducing is more of an expansion thing. It is starting with a specific now and inducing probabilities of a future. Did you get that?
Yeah.
I mean, those are your logics, and it has a tendency of turning things into black and white and right and wrong, good and evil, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Based upon survival. So when we say things are evil, basically what we're saying is that it's anti-survival. Then it goes down into where most people have a tendency of kind of hanging out, and that's thinking to know. See these layers from divine active intelligence into falling down into actual thinking to know. When I say thinking to know, I'm talking about sensory perception. Sensory perception. Get a little bit of quantum mechanic there. At this level of perception, you view things in sensation and solids. If you get an atom and you spin it really fast, it's in orbit really fast, you can't put a stick through that wheel, so to speak, and it appears as solid. You got that?
Yes.
Yeah, but those particles have waves. Those particles are composed of waves. But they go so fast and turn into particles that they appear solid. Like that desk or that paper really is nothing but energy. You got that? Behind those
yes.
particles are waves. Curiously, look at the stem. Source, theory, energy, manifestation. Let's go back all the way up to the top. one of the first things you, as the source, does is flow waves of life energy. Got it? And then it goes and contracts and condenses down into what appears as solids. You got that?
Yes.
Yeah. And then it's all framed into figure to know. Figuring to know. Like knowledge. Like 1 + 1 = 2. It's involving taking everything that we have into this frame of reality, okay? It's a pretty low way of, or it's pretty condensed. It's really down in the solids, okay? It gets into facts. It's a fact that I just now picked up this box and moved it over here. That's a frame of reality. Something we all agreed to view it that way. That's perception. 5 levels of perception. So what we like to do is we like to get to the root. And everyone, human resources manager, and every human resources professional, they want a root cause. What is the problem? And you'll find all economies are composed of 4 M's, manpower, material, machinery, and money. You got that?
I do.
The 4 M's of economy. So what we're looking at here is root cause of life energy. And if we can study the root at the authentic self, the divine act of intelligence, and its characteristics, we stand a lot better chance of getting a good handle on what people are doing without using psychology, okay? I want to get to the root. All right, so that triangle that you're looking at that has those 5 perceptions in it. All right, so this is Ken Payne and Jay Moore and Karen McCrudden at Search for Calling. And what we're going over here is the STEM. It is a model for root causing, taprooting into the root of all economies. And we were just kind of going over what is an economy. Well, it's manpower, it's material, it's machinery, it is money. So we're going to get into the concept of taprooting into the phenomena using some concepts of quantum mechanics. So I just kind of want to go back over this perception has 5 levels. You got that, Karen?
I do.
All right, you see how that works?
It's getting clearer. It has some flow to it for me, so this is good.
Yeah, it's sequence. And it's about manifestation. It means to make visible. So when you use the word manifestation, that is nothing. It means not a thing that you can touch or feel like a solid. But it comes from somewhere, and it's coming from the concept of no thing. So manifestation means to make visible. So we're talking about the STEM, source, theory, energy, manifestation. Your flowing life energy is a spiritual life energy. And through those levels of perception, and through those agreements, and through that reality, it's all framed into now being made visible as things. You see the sequence?
I do.
Does it remind you of anything? I mean, do you have any correlating information or experiences that allow you to relate to that?
Nothing's coming to me at the moment, but I'm sure it will as we go through some more.
All right. Now, over on the left side, well, it doesn't really matter which side of this triangle you go there. And in other words, if the viewing audience could see this, you have one large triangle, and you have that one bottom one in the middle composing 4 triangles in this one large one. You see that there, don't you?
Yes.
Okay, now go to the left side, and this is the triangle of intention. It also has 5 levels to it also. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. What's the first one? It says inspire, right?
Yes.
Okay. So it's at the top, too. So knowing and inspiration go hand in hand, don't they?
Absolutely.
Yeah, being, knowing, action, inspire. So when I say the word inspire, it means in spirit. You got that?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's a very high level of intention. So that's your intention. We may go to an organization. We have the intention to come in to inspire, right? Do you get that?
Absolutely.
All right. And then it drops down into the second level of emotion. Let's see, the second level of perception. That's emotion and imagination. And we, with the thing that corresponds to that, to invest, right?
Yes.
Yeah, trust. Invest. And beneath that is going to be to instruct. Like the teacher, right? Every good teacher that I know of comes with this motivation of love. You got that?
I do.
Good teachers love, they instruct. And then beneath that, there is to... You ever been to a classroom and you feel like the teacher isn't loving you, but they're kind of like, you know, picking on you or incapacitating you?
I do.
I don't know anybody that hasn't had that experience. You know, it's like they're blocking your flow. That's
exactly.
You, you're thinking, you know, we're being a class clown, but the teacher, you know, they incapacitate that flow, and, you know, depends on where you look at it. But incapacitation is also an intention, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And in human resources, many a time you've come into an organization and you've had to incapacitate. Do you understand that?
I do.
Just like that teacher would incapacitate that class clown. All right, now beneath that is going to be the intention down in the frame of reality, to come down in the subconscious, down in the where, you know, we're not so much you know, aware, to incur. You may not consciously go to an organization to incur, but if you flip it around, you have seen other people come into organizations and they play victim.
Constantly.
Almost like they survive off of it. Give me some experiences of that. You ever seen a, you know, a situation where an actual group of people come in and they kind of click together, and next thing you know, it's like, it's almost like they're, it's in their intention to incur suffering. Almost like a victim. Did you get that?
I do.
Mm-hmm. So all five things are all five intentions. So it goes basically from the very top to inspire down to the bottom, more the solid levels of intention, was almost like instinct, isn't it? It's like they're asleep, spiritually asleep, and they're doing it in patterns, and they're not even aware of it.
What I originally thought the incur meant was they basically have to run into that situation or have it hit them over the head before they even are aware of what's going on.
Yeah.
But now I see where I had that vision kind of flip the wrong way.
Yeah. But you've seen plenty of victims in life, right? And they're
instinctively,
yeah, their patterns, their subconscious patterns are turning them into victims. They're not awake. They've got the us versus them mentality. You got that?
Yes.
And since they're not in the have, and they're in the have not, in order for them to have something, they play victim, and then they get some sort of recompense. But when you are on the outside looking at that game, so to speak, it looks like they're playing victim, doesn't it?
It does. They intentionally make an infraction on a rule or a process just to get the attention that that will pay to them for the error that they've made. And unfortunately,
yeah,
after a while, it will cost them their jobs because they are looking for that attention as a victim.
Eureka. You have just said the magic word, attention. If you look at this triangle, right, you have
mm-hmm.
what's called presence. That means conscious, spiritually awake, kind of above, so you can see it kind of like strategically, like a game, and you can see what's going on. Or you can be down into the solids of it all, not in, in kind of spiritually asleep of it all, and going through the patterns of logics. Or you can even go even lower, and you're all about getting attention. So it goes presence, then solids, and then attention. Waves go to particles. Particles turn into solids. And children need attention, right?
Yep. Absolutely, yeah.
I know a lot of grown-up people who act like children. They're just not, they haven't evolved their soul. They have not grown up. They have not maturated up to the level of presence. When I say say solids, maybe there are certain people who don't have callings, and really when you look at, you know, you ask them, what do you want out of life? Really, when you peel it back down and they're down in the solids, they just want a wider picket fence than Mr. Jones. They're down in the solids. You get that? Beneath that are folks who are instinctively going around sucking attention with a big black cloud and woe is me. Poor me. So it's presence, solids, and attention. And what does this form? In the middle triangle of that stem, you have conditions. Their archetypes are what they are. Carl Jung would talk about the archetypes. And there's been various books on archetypes. And let me give you something. Have you ever played chess before?
Yes.
Yeah, a pawn. We use a pawn to block, right? You know, put that pawn up there to block the enemy, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a block. It's like a block or a stuck flow. And above that, you know, and you'll find if you look at a triangle, at the very tip of a triangle, it's about principle. Our principles don't change from one nation to another. In the middle of the triangle, down the solids of things, down the values of things, the wider picket fences, we talk about values. Well, our values are kind of close to the same, but certain cultures, it's okay to lie and lie in business. You understand that?
There
are certain cultures, it's okay to lie in business. So we've dropped from principle down to values. Now we're going to go down into morals. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Morals. Your morals are different than mine. Each individual's morals are totally different from one neighborhood to yours and mine. So down in there, in the bottom of that triangle, is morals. It's like a mask, the social mask. You've heard of that. And we've heard people mind their P's and Q's and they walk on eggshells because, you know, you don't want to offend the person because their morals might be different than yours, right? So getting into this concept of this triangle is a great way of looking at it, because if you look at it, we could say the people who are down in knowledge, they're kind of stuck in this being, in the safety, the security of not wanting to change, and they like to get this feeling of kind of like they're hiding behind the cubicle, and they might not want to share their information because they think that if they share the information, that the human resources or an owner of a company says, well, now that I know what you know, I can get rid of you and bring somebody in cheaper. So they have a tendency of hiding the knowledge. And there's a lot of place at the bottom of a triangle where all the processes are at, and you end up getting another correlating theme here. You could also say, so people who are in the bottom, down in victim, they're into knowledge. They like the minutiae of process. And in the value streams, we could also say in the middle of that triangle, they're into systems. And at the top, they're into leadership, countenance, forecasting, profit, you know, the prophecy of this company is going to be doing this, or investing into other companies. So they're looking at. So what you're looking at here is a pretty good model that explains a whole lot of stuff. So when you're a child, you come in and you need attention. And you evolve your soul and you get enough knowledge, you're going to rise up into power. Power is the ability to kind of hold your place. Learning politics. Maybe thinking around the corner before you say something. So you're not a pawn anymore. Now you're up into, you know, you may not have a stuck communication. Now you're up into becoming like a knight. Have you ever seen how a knight moves? It goes up two and over one. It starts on white, ends up on black. It gets eight possible moves, and it forms a corralling spiral. This is where we get into politics, so to speak. This is an archetype. Politics. Wanted to maintain my position. Now, above that, if you ever played, if you play chess, then we're going to say that the higher archetype is not the wanderer, is going to be the martyr. This is the manager. This person here has gone up to a point where they're going to demonstrate. They're going to put the mask down of power, and they become like your pal. They're like the mentor or the professor who's self-actualizing by giving back. And they're not so much concerned about you know, minding the P's and Q's and walking on eggshells. They're looking at the bigger picture and knowing that if we don't get this product out, we're going to shut the customer down. And they're more black and white. So we're at this love zone, okay? Love, as it pertains to conditions and accountability. Like, I'm going to hold you accountable. Now, you've walked into an organization before. You size it up, and you go, okay, if we don't get this report done by 8 o'clock, it's going to shut that customer down. And the way that these managers speak, they're not spiral communicators, and they're certainly not stuck communicators. They're using specifics like, now, where is that report that I asked for at 8 o'clock? Now, if he's asking a person who's down about power, that person's going to respond with spiral flow. He's going to say, well, I talked to Bill, and Bill talked to Frank, and Frank's got a party night, and you're invited. You ever come across that before?
Yes.
Yeah, it's about power. It's about politics. They're more concerned about security and their position than they're not really thinking about the big picture. But the manager, who's up in love, and who's like the pal, it's like the professor who's actualized, guess what might happen? He might get, because of his passion, looking at the big picture, he might actually martyr himself, fall on the company sword for the big picture, because someone beneath him, like the supervisors and engineers, might go, did you hear what she said? She used the F word. And they all kind of click together and gang up and go to HR and they say, let's get rid of that mean guy. Have you ever seen that before?
I have.
Yeah. But the funny thing about it is this person who's in management is using more passion, using more life energy, more flow, cares more about integrity, seeing us as one. So you'll see them as more of a black and white and right and wrong and yes and no kind of person, won't you?
Exactly.
Yeah. That's kind of like the bishop on that chessboard. He uses a lot of specifics. He's either black or he's white. And if you ever look at how that forms an X, black or white, forms an X is a jagged flow. It's actually a jagged energy. Aggressive, accountable, want to hold people accountable. Kind of like a, you know, so you catch that?
I do.
Yeah. Now let's go up a little higher. Okay, now let's go up into, out of the manufacturing plant, where the rubber isn't hitting the road all the time. It isn't about schedule tracking and holding accountability. It's about the ability to forecast. Kind of above, using the ability of trust to know. And who do corporate people hire? Well, they hire the guy or the person who's given back. Remember the martyr and the bishop. That's the one who's fallen on the company sword, right, for the big picture. And they say, well, who do we trust? Well, we trust the person who's given back. When you go into interviews at corporate level, it isn't so much about what you know in your toolbox. It isn't so much about your titles. Mostly they want to hear how you come in to basically heal a company by giving back and sacrificing certain things. And with all that passion, tell your war stories. Why? Because they permeate to know. They really have the emotion on. They're using more psychology to see whether or not they can trust you. Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah. And at this point, it's all about keeping things steady and conservative because they're investment. Now, right above that, it's called freedom or autonomy. You got that? This is basically your entrepreneur who's got the great idea. Like when you open up your business, you have these great ideas. They've never even been tried before. You're more open at the top, more inspired. Looking at the big picture, not necessarily thinking about whether or not, well, you know, if I say this, it might piss them off, or if I say this, you know, I've got, you know, it's new, they might think of it as being bad, and, you know, you had to get to a point and get past this pretense of morals and walking on eggshells in order to be an entrepreneur. You had to have a passion and inspired and see the big picture and say, you know what, let's try this. Now, this is your innovative side. This is your genius side. This is your artistic side. This is your upper self. Does that make sense?
You can't have a fear of rejection if you're going to be an entrepreneur. And that all plays into exactly what you just said.
You see it, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
You see the sequence. So we have various flows. We have the stuck flow, the spiral flow, the specific flow, the steady. And then we have the strong flow. This is about life energy and how your communication. It's a hierarchical way. It's kind of like Maslow stuff, isn't it?
It is.
It's also kind of like Carl Jung in that it also has archetypes in it, even in the way people talk, like chess pieces. Now, I read this one book, and I don't recall exactly the name of it, but it said, you know, when we start off as kids, we start off as innocent and kind of like a victim. They actually say innocent, but as, you know, you come across a grown man or woman, and they're still acting like a child, we'd call them a victim, right? And I say that's a pawn. Then they you grow up, and then you hit your teenage years, right? You want to kind of get in and, you know, make less of your abilities and fit in and get into the herd, right? As a teenager, it's like, you know, who's popular, right?
Exactly.
A lot of people who are leaders never, ever fit in because they can't make less of their psychic abilities and dumb down into the solids of things, so they always seem like they're on the outside looking in. And then when you're a teenager, you have to adopt morals. You have to put on the social mask. Heck with the values and heck with the integrity and principle, I've got to fit in. You understand that? You know, the cool kids, right?
Yeah.
I know a lot of cool kids that will do something cruel in a setting, as long as it makes them popular and gets all the people to laugh, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a fall from integrity or in principle down to value, down to morals, right? It's that social mask. This is called the archetype of the wanderer. And the wanderer looks like the knight. He's got the spiral flow. He's evasive. He's kind of tricky. Catch my drift?
I do.
Yeah, he jumps over the chain of command and he gossips. He goes, hey, that guy up there, he hurt me. He said the F word. And you get rid of the guy that's actually the mover and the shaker, the real manager. You've seen it 100 times. Get it? That's the wonder. And you'll see the wonder in all of us. Everyone's done that. Wander from one place to another, looking for the right job. You look at a resume, you go, ah, this guy's having too many jobs. Something's going on here. Because people spot that game and go, oh, he likes gossip. He likes jumping over the chain of command. He's evasive. He's not specific enough. Then you can feel it. If you're awake enough, you can feel it. As soon as they walk in the room, you go, oh, yeah, that would be the wonder. Now, after, generally speaking, a person gets married, they generally are, you know, fall in love and have children. They generally have to sacrifice a little bit of themselves, don't they? For the children or for the spouse. And that goes up to the bishop. That's more passion. That's the love. So sacrifice a little bit of myself, and we become martyr. You've seen that, you know, how your mother, how she sacrificed so much of her, you know, in order to do what? For the offspring, for the kids, right? Same with the father. That is another soul state. It's an archetype. Okay? That's called the martyr. Most people stop right there. And then next thing you know, they look in the mirror, and they're 55 years old. Kids are all grown up. And they're kind of angry. Cantankerous. You know what I'm saying? They get cantankerous, don't they? And like managers and organizations, if they don't get up and continue, if they don't rise above and go up into corporate, right? They don't get smoothed out. They don't get, you know, they don't go wide, right? So how do you go from manager to corporate? How do you go from love up to trust? It's the toughest crossover there is. Well, every one of these are tough crossovers, but this one here's a dandy. How do you do it? How do you stop being a martyr and become a warrior? Because the next one up is warrior. It's the castle.
You have to change perspective. You've got to look at big picture versus everyday little picture.
Yeah.
Well, the little picture's in the big picture, but you've got to be able to look farther to the left and to the right or forward and back to make those metrics work in order to help you forecast and move forward with what you need to do.
Right. Well, if you look at a chess piece, do realize the other three that we've talked about, the pawn, the knight, and the bishop, when they attack, they don't attack face-to-face. The pawn attacks diagonally. Of course, we know the horse, it doesn't attack face-to-face. The bishop doesn't attack face-to-face. When I say the next archetype, spiritual game. His castle. It's the first one to do what? Confront face-to-face. When it attacks, it is a face-to-face move. You get it?
Exactly.
What does that mean when I say confront?
You know there's a problem, and you've got to do what you need to do to get it resolved. And that means being in uneasy situations, places you don't want to go to, when you have to ask questions, investigate, and dig into the problem.
Dig in. And where's in? It's in the soul. This is at the level of trust. It means permeate to know, using your emotion, your soul abilities, your psychic abilities. When I say psych, I mean soul, because the word are the same in Greek. A spiritual warrior will confront themselves. They see themselves. They dig into themselves. They go, maybe the problem is with me. Now, if one's stuck down in the black and white, very rarely do you hold, and that person's being paid as a manager to do what? To go hold people accountable. Then you'll find that that type of archer blames the target, or they blame the wind, or the bow, or the arrow. Very rarely do they have the warrior mentality to see themselves as the source, into the psychology of it all. How many people do you know that really don't go around and think, well, maybe it's me? I mean, outwardly, thinking, I'm the one who pulled this incident in. It's my responsibility. How come I keep attracting victims? How come I keep attracting people who are sneaky? How come I keep attracting people who are angry? Do you understand what I'm saying? It's the warrior's path. It is the warrior's path. It is root causing, seeing themselves as source. When a person can do that, you'll find that they're even higher up and able to be trusted. Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah, and you'll see it in the statistics, too. They have a smoother, more steady type of statistic, just like people in corporate. Maybe they don't want to rock the boat. They're conservative, right? Just like a banker, he's conservative. He's not going to do anything out of passion. And the old Spanish proverb, there's no such thing as a man on a fast horse. No such thing as a wise man on a fast horse. All that passion, you know, gets you up into ups and downs, doesn't it? Gets that jagged, aggressive, and holding accountable and all that stuff. So what you're looking at is archetypes that we go from. What's next? The queen. So we went from castle up to queen. Now, if you look at the flow that she puts out, it's like an asterisk, like a star. It has 8 possible rays coming out of it. It combines the bishop of the X and the cross of a castle, and it flows out like a star. And the archetype of this is the magician. Magical. These people who are entrepreneurs, they're magical. They're open at the top. They're inspired. They're strong flow. They're authentic. They peeled the onion of the social mask off. They evolved their soul to a level of spiritual awareness. Genius, artist, or upper self. And when they walk in the door, they have this command presence because they're not considering what you think, because they're just authentic like a stream, and they don't need to think before they flow. They just flow. They don't have to look before they flow. They just flow. Their soul is clear. They don't have all that blocked up energy in there. The walls are down, and they just flow. They walk up on the stage, and they could walk up on the stage, and there could be all these people talking, and all the glasses clinking, and all the gossip, and he said, she said. They could walk up on the stage, and their life energy flow is so dynamic that their presence alone, that command presence, people feel it turn around. And they go, huh, somebody's here. And if you've ever been in a bar, and you're talking, all of a sudden somebody comes in, and you can't see them. You don't have to look to know. You can feel them. They walk in, and you feel that presence, and you turn around, and you go, huh. Now you know what I'm talking about by being dynamic, right? It's based on presence. It's presence. It's a magic. So let's go back to this concept that we're like a bulb. And we're connected to source point. You're a source. We're all sources. We're all connected to this source point. And if you want to look at it like this, there's a battery behind us called infinity, God, whatever you want to call it. It is a potential of all potentiality. We are flowing by nature, our spiritual life energy called dynamis, through this lens. That lens is that second level perception called permeation or osmosis. Two bubbles coming so close together that they actually form a Venn diagram trying to integrate it. That little football in the middle of two circles, that football, that diamond, or whatever you want to call it, that is the ability to communicate without using words. Psychic. Because the walls are down. And you can, you know, just like an old couple. They don't even have to finish the, you know, they can finish the other person's sentences. And just like a mother holds a child, as soon as that mother feels any emotion, immediately they are in state of permeation, so the child feels it too. There aren't these walls, there aren't these life energy, you know, where that lens is clear. It hasn't been beaten down, hasn't been programmed, you know, catch my drift now. That's magic. Going back to your basic nature when you were a child. I've even heard metaphors along in the Bible that says if you want to get into heaven, you have to be like a child. Forget the social mask. Forget about trying to fit in. Don't walk on eggshells. Don't hide your talent underneath the soil in the earth. Shine. Take the bushel basket off and shine. You've heard these things before. How do you apply this in business? How do you really get leadership in business? How do you sift through all these people who want to come to work for you? How do you sift all this out and surface the golden nugget, the real leader who wants to shine? Who you know is probably isn't going to fit in, but will lead the hurting masses with integrity, with vision, with innovation, with presence. That is what you are, and everyone has it in them. If they'll just take the bushel basket off and start to flow from authentic self. You got this model?
I do.
Yeah, it's a sequence of source, theory, energy manifestation, and a sequence of how things go through archetypes, spiritual archetypes. Now, this is all great, and it'll bliss you out, and it's all fine and dandy, but it doesn't do you a darn bit of good if you can't use it pragmatically. So we've got to make it complex. That model right there is so simple, it eludes you. It's not complex enough to grasp. So we have to put some knowledge on it. We got to get down into some figures so that we can figure how do we differentiate between those who got it and those who don't. And this is how we do it. We start talking about source. You, the authentic self, the spiritual aspect of self. So we have to go to the closest thing that we know about source that can be measured, and that will be in the level of permeation. So we're going to go up to impression. What I want you to do is get out an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper, and I want you to get the impression, your imagination and your emotion of the last place you worked at. TDS, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, now TDS. Now, use your imagination. Use your soul. Go back there. Get the impression, the imagery, the faces, the politics, the goals, the timing. And just tell me when you actually feel that you are there.
Okay.
Good. Now, I want you to imagine that you're above the rooftop of that place of work, looking down on it and seeing the roof, and then pretend it is that piece of paper. And tell me when you're there, looking about 50 yards above, looking down, there's the rooftop, there they are. And get the impression of being ascended above it and looking and feeling it. And tell me when you're there.
I got it.
Okay, good. Do you feel it?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm going to ask you a very simple question at this level of perception. Draw me a circle that represents your life energy in terms of influence and control on that piece of paper in that space of work. Now, good. Very simple question. We can tell at this high level of perception a lot of things because it's so close to the truth of source. Because it's such a high level of perception, you got that? It's above logics, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. It is in the soul. So the first impression will pick up so many things. We're going to go into the size and the shape. Now let's go into the size of that circle in terms of inches. 1 inches, 2 inches, 3 inches, 4, 5, 6. How many inches is the size of that circle?
Let's see, it's two thumbs across, so that'll make it about three inches in diameter.
And that is classic for human resources, okay? And it's classic for people in those type of social roles. The size will pick up a lot, okay? We're now going to get into shape. Now, if you've got a circle that looks like an egg on its side, or an orange, or it's going to look like a face, like it's an oval, like an egg on end, it'll pick up a lot of information. What is the shape of it? Is it somewhere between an orange and...
It's an oval.
Describe the shape. Okay, so it's oval, like a face, that picks up a lot of information. You know what that tells me? Okay? Before I go into what that tells you, what I'm going to ask you is a differentiation question, okay? Okay?
Okay.
So before I do that, I want you to flip that sheet of paper over to where it's blank again.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to do another impression so you can differentiate how your life energy flows based on impression. Okay?
Okay.
Now, I want you to go to a place, your apartment or your house, okay? And do the same thing. Tell me when you're there. Look at your coffee makers and your refrigerators and, you know, and be there in impression. Tell me when you feel like you're actually there.
Okay.
Okay. Now rise above it about 50 yards and look down on the roof and draw a circle that represents your life energy in terms of influence and control in that space.
Okay.
What's the size?
It's about 40% smaller than the one I drew for work.
Ah, that tells me a lot. Okay, that means what I'm looking at is other sources. You're looking at other sources, okay?
Okay.
Okay, now I want you to do it where you're at right now. Wherever you're at right now, okay? You're in the room right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're
mm-hmm.
in a hotel room. Now, I'll just do the same thing as it pertains to this hotel room. Draw a circle that represents your life energy in terms of influence and control within the space you're in now.
Okay. It's about the size of a dime.
Curious. Okay, so you really flow bigger at work with other sources, and they stimulate you more than when you're by yourself. Tell
yes.
me what you were thinking. Okay, so you are a here's the concept. Here's the question. Where does your life energy stop?
Where does it stop?
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
It's in Tell City, Indiana right now, and it's on the entire globe as we speak. Your life energy is following your communication, right? And your communication influences and controls things, right?
Yes.
It's wild, isn't it? When you look at it from the standpoint of life energy, drawing the circle that represents your life energy in terms of influence and control, it's a ripple effect. You're affecting me right now. There's a piece of your heart in me. And we're broadcasting this on the World Wide Web. So in essence, you're affecting all of us. Tell me something that you're not affecting with your life energy. When you think about it in terms of spiritual life energy.
Mm-hmm.
in the ripple effect?
I am not influencing a new company at this point in time.
You think we're all... All right, so let's talk about interconnectedness. Me and you are connected because we're in communication, right?
Correct.
Above the world of motion, above the world of logics, of linear flow of space and time. Did you know that if you walk across the street, you'll still be in the center of infinity?
Yes, because it moves with you, doesn't stay stagnant.
That's one way of looking at it. But say that your life energy is spirit, and since wherever you walk, you'll always be the center of infinity, and so will I. So right above the tip of that triangle is, we could call that source point, where we truly all emanate from, where there is no space or time, and it is static, always has been, always will be, like a circle, has no beginning or ending. Rise above thinking about what I just said, and feel it. Feel being in the center of infinity, above space and time, and flowing spirit, interconnected. And feel that. Let the walls down and just flow it out. And know that is the truth. That there is no space where we emanate from, then there's no need to communicate. We're, you could say that we are one. We're all interconnected. Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah, so every thought you have is like putting a pebble in a pool, and it ripples and affects us all, since we are all one. Letting the walls down, and see, this concept of walls, they're psychic barriers is all they are. They form the concept of self. And the barrier is put up whenever you perceive the concept of something that is anti-survival, or some people call it evil. If you perceive the concept of evil outside of your universe, it's unnatural to put up a wall. You understand that? A psychic barrier. Well, guess what you've just done? You just now walled in that concept within your own universe. And this is where we get logics of black and white, good and right and wrong. Your walls.
Excuse me.
That's all right. Think
it's that allergy time of year.
Yeah. Don't think about it. Go above think. Don't even look at it. Just know it. Know that where you emanate from is the same non-linear space as me and Jay and everybody on this planet. Where we truly emanate from is in the center of infinity above space and time, where we do not need to communicate, because the only reason why we can communicate now is because of space. Got that?
It's all making sense, yep.
Yeah, and what gives us the concept of separation, okay, is our walls. And we have this concept of good and bad and right and wrong. And these walls wall up the very concept of evil that we're trying to keep out. This is why people stay in that black and white and right and wrong and good and evil and aggressive and accountability and all that, you know, blame stuff. We're all one. Which actually, if you look at the word integrity and the word integrate and integration, you put two circles together and they're permeating as one. Two souls is one, means whole. So integrity means whole. Beautiful, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. Your thoughts are like pebbles that go into the ocean of love, and you ripple, and it's affecting us all. Whether you see it in solids or not. Solids would be down in the thinking to know, okay? The sensory perception. Our figure to know, where we frame the essence of spirit into this frame of reality called knowledge. it's pretty low gradient. It slows things way down. Kind of takes the linear movie and slows it down. But where we truly emanate from, where there is no space, there is no time, it's like a circle. It's like whole. Always has been, always will be. Alpha, always has been. Omega, always will be. Problems, kind of stuff. Always has been, always will be. Like a circle, no beginning, no end. You're spherical. So you are spherical. Like a bubble. Like a circle. But we suffer from the veils of amnesia. We suffer from our walls, and we suffer from the concept of a linear beginning and end. Because we suffer from the biggest lie. And the biggest lie, linear, Greek, linear, lie, about the same. We suffer from the biggest lie is that we think and figure we are bodies. And we put on that basket, and it takes our light out, right? We have spiritual amnesia. Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah, it's cool stuff. All right, well, it'll bliss you out. It'll bliss you out, and it's really not, workable until we get some more complexities on this. Now, you've got some stuff here in terms of how you perceive self. And if you think to know, then your circle's going to be roughly about 3 inches. If you're looking to know and love and management, then it's going to be bigger. This is not designed to typecast. This is designed to liberate, because the concept of clearing and executive coaching and the life energy clearing that we provide as personeers is, if anything is unwanted, yet thoroughly viewed from source, the viewer, the divine act of intelligence, and it's thoroughly viewed with truth, and it's unwanted, it'll vanish. And you can have that, right? You can have a bigger circle size. If you know that the truth is, you are the truth, and I am the truth, and Jay is the truth, and we really don't move. We don't move. We have the illusion of movement in a linear flow. Kind of like a playground. It's temporary. If you think you're a body, then you're going to be down in the lower form of awareness, and you're going to think to them, so to speak. But if you know, and you have knowing at the authentic self, the spiritual aspect of self, then you know you always have been, you always will be, and you know this is an illusion of some form. Because the truth doesn't alter. The truth doesn't change. The truth is static. It's in the center. And then we had to lie. We had to get linear with it. And it's like putting on a veil of amnesia. And we dumb ourselves down and become solid, and we think or figure that we're bodies, and that we die. No, we don't die. Expect miracles, Karen. Expect miracles if you fold in your truth, that you are the truth, that you always have been, you always will be. Expect to be more dynamic. Expect more flow. Expect the next time that we talk and say, draw me a circle that represents your life energy in terms of time, in terms of influence and control. Expect that you'll know that your thoughts are like pebbles that go into the ocean of love, above the linear flow, so to speak. Expect that your circle is going to be a lot bigger. Expect that when you walk into a room, you won't be thinking, what do these people think about me? You'll be feeling them, and they'll feel it. Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah, it's beautiful stuff. Okay, so we get into this for what you're running is something I created called Dyna Physics. It's a physic on spirit. And it's not designed to typecast and put you in a box. It's designed to get you to look at it and unfold and get out of that box and flow bigger is all. All right, so we look at, you got some models here. We're going to run some models here real quickly, and you'll see the actual physics of it all. So there is a dichotomy that you can look at the very end. The dichotomy is it's like a two-edged sword. It cuts both ways, damned if you do, damned if you don't kind of stuff. It's a paradox, and, it's problems. And we love problems, because if you always have been and you always will be, kind of like a puzzle, kind of like a game. If I say, look at life, and I explain life to you, life has allies, enemies, traps, treasures, freedoms, time constraints, boundaries. Now, just I look at the word game and describe it, and those two definitions are very close, aren't they? Yes, you have time You don't get so much time to play it. It's got allies, enemies, traps, freedoms, treasures, wins, losses, liberties. Same stuff, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, but strategically, viewing from source, what would you rather do, be playing the game of life or have it play you? If you're down in the think to know and figure to know and you think you're a body and you figure you're a body, you're going to be in overwhelm. You will be. Life will be happening to you. You'll be like in a petri dish swirling around. You'll be the effect, and it'll be so easy to play victim, and it's always happening to me. It's always happening to me because they've lost their spiritual essence. They're not above it where they truly emanate from and seeing it strategically, prophetically, forecasting. You'd be awake then, wouldn't you? If you're viewing it from that source, you would be able to play it. You'd be able to strategize. You'd be able to see the strategy. You'd be able to see the ripple effect, the cause and effect of things. Does that make sense?
It does.
Good. Now, that circle size and shape, it's just a concept of an impression. If it's unwanted, thoroughly viewed, you can have a cognition. I can ask you questions. You get ownership on that question because you know it's your truth, not mine. That's teaching. Teaching is what I tell you. When I'm coaching, I ask you. You have your own truth. You have your own cognition. You have your own light bulb. It folds in. You have ownership. It sticks to your ribs, and you can work it. Okay? Teaching and coaching a little different. So I start asking questions. That circle size at work, okay? 3 inches, right? So down, right down 3 inches. Now, Euclid, the father of geometry and math, whatever you want to call this guy, he said that all universes could be explained in terms of ratios. Well, guess what? You're a universe. J is a universe. I'm a universe. You put all the universes together, you have God, or the universe, whatever you want to call it. But you're unique. J is unique. I'm unique. You have your own unique universe. You close your eyes. Okay? And you're in your own universe. Open your eyes and you see this canvas of reality that we all play in this physical universe. Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah, in your own universe, it's okay to think about anything you want to. You can morph things together like, in my universe, I can create in the center of my infinity. Anything goes. But I want to get into your universe. I want to get you to see what you're creating. And if you see that you're about the most important thing I can think of to you would be your life energy, right? It is the first thing that you flow. It's even both logics. So we can get that unblocked. You can get more dynamic and you can heal more people. As a human resources professional, you're basically your number one duty is to heal organizations by bringing in the right people and getting rid of the wrong ones, right?
Exactly.
And basically, you're a healer. You heal organizations. All right. So, 3 inches. Now, write down 3 anywhere you want to. Now, let's go into the shape, and you say it's oval. Well, we go from 0 to 10 on these things. Oval. Is it really skinny oval, or is it kind of medium oval, or is it more round oval?
It looks like if you were to cut a hard-boiled egg in half and look at it from the inside, it's definitely a little bit wider on the bottom than the top, but it's not skinny.
All right, let's give that a six. Okay?
Okay.
So it's more than round. That would be like a 5, okay? Does that make sense?
That
if it's really skinny, you would be like an 8. All right, now what does it tell me? I'm going to give it a 6.
Okay.
Okay. So we take the 3 in terms of size. Now the shape is important. Tells me a lot. Okay, it means you're an up and down communicator. It means you communicate up. You can talk to the CEO of a company, and you can bring it down to the people in process down the floor, right? Now, if you had a nice round one, you'd be kind of thinking, well, I'll talk a little bit above me, a little bit below me, a little to the side, a little to the side. That's the balanced one, okay? That's your black and white thinker. And you're mostly in the black and white, but you still have the ability to communicate up and down more than the average person. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Good. Now, let's take the person who's in a clique, and they're all about security, and I mean, you know, knowledge and in the process, and they're kind of like want to form in a herding instinct, and they will have a circle that goes left and right. Okay, that means they communicate horizontally. They kind of want to hang out in that clique. Does that make sense?
Mm.
They don't want to communicate too far down or too far up. They want to kind of herd in that, you're like me, I can talk to you. You got that?
I do.
Yeah, when you went, Now, Spinoza, who's another philosopher, he goes, we start at desire. In other words, your life energy comes from this urge to express your unique divine self in this hologram. program or this this campus of beauty that we're in here, Earth, what do you want to call it? Now, it starts with urge, and then it splits through logics of pain and pleasure. Pain would be the person who's grieving or depressed or even drunk. Try it with a drunk person. Ask them to draw a circle, and they'll use most of their wrist, and they'll hunker down and hide around a little bit, and then their circle's going to be left and right. They put more weight. There's more weight on that person because they're in pain. They're not dynamic. They're not being understood. Their uniqueness is not being acknowledged. They don't want their uniqueness to shine out. They want to fit in, and that's very painful. Got it? So when you ask that person to draw a circle, it's going to be left and right with a lot of weight on it. Ask a person who's more in the balance, and they're going to try to make a nice round circle. Ask a person who's a little bit more dynamic, idealistic, more visionary type, and they're going to go up and down real fast without putting any weight on the desk whatsoever. Does that make sense?
Okay.
Yeah. So you're getting that. So you understood that.
Yes.
Yeah, that's pleasure. That is a person who is flowing more towards up and down and trying to make a difference. Cool. So you put your 6 and your 3 together equals 9, and then you divide that by 2, you get a ratio of 4.5, so then put down 4.5.
Okay.
Or you can also say that's 45%. You got it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. That's your lens. That's not the bulb. That's the lens. That's the group think of your social programming based on your role. There's a lot of experience in that lens. Okay? Let's go to the bulb. Let's talk about passion. Passion, that flow, before it even hits the lens, okay? We talk about time and space and work in terms of time and space. Now, you're talking to an executive recruiter, and he's going to ask you, hey, look at life like a game and think about all the places you could work at. Can you relocate? And if you say, no, I'm like a pawn, I have to stay within a 50-mile radius, I can't move as much as a queen, then you give it a score. Okay, then you say, hey, can you relocate? And the guy goes, no, I can, but as long as it's within a 200-mile radius, that is going to be like a knight, like the wanderer. He's comfortable within that radius of a 200-mile radius. You got that?
Mm-hmm.
Then you go up into people who are like managers, more dynamic, more shine, taking up more space and seeing more of the board of life. And they're going to say, well, outside the 200-mile radius, yes, but it has to be a very specific spot. Like it has to be Dallas or New York or Baltimore. A little bit more dynamic, you see it?
Mm-hmm.
Then you ask him, hey, can you relocate? He goes, yeah, I can, as long as it's within the southeast or the northwest or the midwest. So that's region. That's going to be like the castle. You get that?
I do.
Taking up more space on that board. Then you ask a person, hey, can you relocate? Now, we're talking about this person's ability to let go of things. Detach from things, so they're I'm open. I don't care. Hey, I'm in a position where I look at life as a smorgasbord, and I ain't going to cling onto one little bitty, knapsack. I ain't going to cling. I got to let go of that, and so I can reach out and get, the smorgasbord of life. So it's about detachment. It's about letting go. Does that make sense?
It does.
But I can reach if you won't let go. People don't understand that. Because they're down in the figure and thinking of solids, and they need the attention of their family. And they think, well, if I leave my family, and all that stuff, well, they're kind of codependent and sticky, and they're stuck. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
There's so much smorgasbord. So I ask you as an executive, will you relocate? And you say, well, yeah. That tells me a gobs about you, that you're self-determined, more like the cowboy, more the pioneer that started this country up in the first place. I've come talk to a lot of people from other countries, and they let go of stuff. The next you know, that you can barely even communicate with them. Their accent is so tough to hear. Next thing you know, 3 years later, they're driving around a BMW and they own their own business. That is not their finger that's doing that. That is their spirit and their awareness to let go of things so they can reach out and grab life and shine like a light and see the entire board, right? That's dynamic. That's a mover and a shaker. So I ask you, are you open to relocate anywhere? Or do you want a region? Or do you want a, truthfully?
Anywhere.
Yeah, it's open. I love that. So put a 10 down. That's passion. That means your light shines. You're not stuck. You don't have that codependent stickiness. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You expect miracles from a person like that. recipients. All right, now we go into time. Now we just did space, now let's do time. Ready? 8 to 9 hours a day at work, 9 to 10, 10 to 11, 11 to 12, 12 to 13. How many hours can you work on a daily basis without the thought of, I gotta go home and, you know, all that stuff? 8 to 9, 9 to 10, 10 to 11, 11 to 12, 12 to 13.
9 to 10.
8 to 9, 9 to 10 is going to give you a 4. Got it?
Mm-hmm.
Question is, during a lunch, can you work more than 9 to 10, or do you have to go home?
Oh, no. I just keep going.
Okay. So I think that it's more than 9 to 10. I think you're comfortable with 9 to 10, but I guess specifically, how many hours can you work without the thought of, I got to go home? Because you know what I'm talking about. There are certain people, they come and they clock that, they punch that clock, and they're going to get out of there 8 to 9, 9 to 10 hours. They have to. They formulated their game that way. Can you work 10 to 11?
Easily.
11 to 12?
When I hit that 12-hour mark, that's usually the wall when I start thinking,
all right,
I need
11
to pack
to 12.
This up. Yeah.
All right, I'm going to go 11 to 12. So that's going to give you an 8.
Okay.
You put your 8 and your 10, that's 18, divided by 2 is 9. Got that? 9
mm-hmm.
plus your 4.5 is going to give me a magnitude score. You got that?
Mm-hmm.
9 plus 4.5 is 13.5 divided by 2. Got that?
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm looking at is your magnitude. 13.5 divided by 2 is 67, or 6.75. You got that?
I do.
6.75. So just put down 67.5. That's your magnitude. I'm as close as I possibly can to getting a good snapshot on your abilities. You got it?
Okay.
Okay. Now, write that number down because we're going to come back to it. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
67.5% is going to be right between, on that grid, between love and trust. 67% is right between love and trust. 67% is right between knowing by permeation and knowing by looking. It's between a manager and a corporate person is where it's at. It's between the bishop and the castle, right in that, the very, very beginning. So, you know, you have the ability to be jagged and smooth is what it says, or wavering and smooth, or specific and smooth. Does that make any sense? In a hierarchy, that's pretty strong. Now let's do some life design stuff, and we're going to go run this pretty fast. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
All right, now I had to draw a wheel that's got 5 stages in life. You ready?
Yep.
We're going to get into some really fast stuff here. All right, between on that wheel, you got those 5 segments. We're going to start your clock at 20 years old. And since there's 5 stages in life at work, we're going to label the first segment A, and that means TEK, and just put TEK in that segment. TEK stands for technology with the motivation of expertise, and your view is on knowledge. So when you're 20 years old, you don't have any tools to give, right?
Right.
But you have to go out with enthusiasm and pick up tools. So what are you looking at? Well, you look at the company as the source of technology, and you're motivated by to become an expert so that you can get knowledge, security. Got it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So put TEK on that wheel, and then go to your wedding cake and put, on a scale of 0 to 5, of the last place you worked at, which was TDS, right?
Yes.
At the bottom, that's the A on 0 to 5, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And put a TEK in there, too.
Okay.
Now, let's measure TDS. It's not IBM, Procter & Gamble, where all the technology and Harvard grads are trying to knock the door down and get in, right?
Right.
Okay, so on a scale of 0 to 5, what was the sales volume of TDS? 50, 60, 70 mil? 100 mil? 200 mil?
No, actually, 27.
27 mil?
Mm-hmm.
Well, on a scale of 0 to 5 of all the places you could work at, you would have to give that, well, it's not even average. I mean, you know, it's hardly even on the radar screen. companies, your average company out there that a professional works at, it's probably going to be around a 200 million company worldwide. Does that make any sense?
It does.
Just think about a hierarchy. Now, you know, like a triangle, right? Once you get down in the, and there's all kinds of mom and pop shops out there that you can work at that, like, you know 500,000 to 5 million. That would be like a 0.5. So you would have to give yourself probably about a 's not quite average, a little bit beneath average, okay?
Okay.
Doesn't have the highest technology, doesn't have the highest growth, doesn't have the highest image, and doesn't have the highest sales. So when you look at that wedding cake, when I mean technology, growth, image, and sales, we all kind of sequence together. The higher the technology, the more it grows, the more the better the image, and the more the sales. Does that make sense? Kind of like a Procter & Gamble. Give it a 2, or maybe even
okay.
a 1 point. Yeah, I'd say, let me get a quick look on that, on the criteria. What you're going to end up getting a ratio is what you're going to get. I'm going to give it a 2.2 because it's almost average, okay? I mean, it's almost in the average. So just give it a 2.2, if you will.
Okay.
2.5 would be average. Does that feel right to you? About a 2.2?
Yeah.
We're going up into feeling. It has to feel right and think right. Give it a 2.2. So you take 2.2 divided by 5.
Mm-hmm.
And let me put a calculator on that. 2.2 divided by 5 is 0.44. Isn't that wild?
Mm-hmm.
That's that 45% that popped up on that first lens. Maybe you took the 9 and the 3 and you divide it, and I think you used it.
Mm-hmm.
And it came out to about a 45. Yeah, it's kind of curious, isn't it? It's a matter of fact. Group think. You know what group think is? Doing things at business that we wouldn't do if we owned our own business. It's negative. Negative groupthink slimes us. We fit into that. And the very psychic energies of those around us, since we're creatures of mimicry, would fall into this thinking to know. Those people would have spiral flow, is what I'm saying.
It's my least favorite phrase in the whole world. That's how we've always done it.
Spiral flow, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting
yep.
a different result. So what I'm not talking about is that's not you. But it did affect your circle size, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
See how that correlates?
Mm-hmm. I do.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Hmm.
So your circle shape was a 3, right?
Yep.
Excuse me, a 6. I gave it a 6, and your size is a 3. Gave you a 9. Came in at 4.5. It's 45%. Puts it at think to know. It correlates over to that STEM model at spiral flow. And there's probably some incapacitation going on in there, wasn't there? Some gossip.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's what is stuck on you. That's not you. That's not your energy. Release it, if you would. It's not you. Just blow it off. Just imagine it like sand coming off a lens and just blow it off. That's not me. I'm not sneaky. I'm not evasive. I'm not spiral. That was them. That's why I don't longer work there. You let go of it. You let go of you. Either way, you're separated from it. So now you can see it as it is. If it's unwanted and thoroughly viewed, it can blow off and vanish, right? See, I'm not trying to typecast you and say that you're this. I'm just saying this, the differentiation, is not you. Does that make sense?
It does.
Sweet. Your passion came out really high. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I need to change your scores here. I'm actually going to run my model and my software here. On the location, don't give it a 10, give it a 9. And on 11 to 12 hours, give it an 8. And that came in at 17. Use your passion score at 8.5. I know you don't like crossing things out, but I need to make sure that this is recorded for their purpose. Came in at 64.35. So get rid of the 67.75 and turn it into a 64.35.
Okay.
Means 8.5 plus 4.5, or your passion going through the lens, the magnitude, equals 64.35. Means, in this unit of time, I can predict that you make a great manager with a black and white, aggressive, and assertive and kick-ass kind of manager. More apt to probably use jagged type of energy to. So it also means you probably like being in a manufacturing plant where the rubber hits the road with a lot of love and instructing people. Does that make sense?
It does.
And you also like to talk in specifics. Does that make sense?
Yes.
If you use that STEM model, it'll make perfect sense. Also means that you are playing a archetypical archetype role of sacrifice. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So you probably will fall on company's swords for the bigger picture is what it means. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Probability. All right. So what I'm saying here is when you look at life in general as a whole, do you think it's maybe 50% destiny and 50% your choice? Where you're at in life right now, all the things that ever happened to you, do you think it's like 50%
destiny? I think it's weighted more on my side. I think it's more 60-40.
Okay, so let's give it 70% you did it, and 30% was other sources, right?
Right.
So I'm going to give that a 4 on my control diet. We'll show this to you a little bit later here. You're doing it manually. All right, let's go and get you to hire people in your own business. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of fun. You're hiring people in your own business. We're just going to have to go back to the coach wheel here real fast, okay? I'm going to go back to that wheel, okay?
Okay.
When you're 30 to 40 years old, it's about challenge, advancement, and power. You got that?
Yep.
Challenge and advancement and power. Well, power and politics kind of go hand in hand, don't they? And that's where we get thinking to know and thinking around the corner before we speak and mind our P's and Q's, and you would say that's going to give you some spiral flow, right?
Yep.
Okay. So that's generally what we had to learn between the ages of 30 and 40, so put down CAP on that wheel. So the B slice of that cake, that is going to be CAP. So B equals CAP, challenge, advancement, and power. Got it?
Got it.
And if we let go of the power trip and thinking around the corner and the gossip and all that politics stuff, we go up to what's called PAL. That's C. That's the professor who wants to teach, and he's self-actualized by giving back, and he's making sacrifices out of love for the company, right? PAL. So put PAL in that C zone.
Okay.
All right, so then we talked about corporate people. Who do they trust? They trust the person who's giving back, and they are all about credibility. And we just put down CAT in the D zone. CAT, like the corporate cat. Credibility, action, abundance, and trust. So they go to companies, and they are about who we trust, and they want to create abundance for the company, going in the long run. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Then
they'll get theirs back. Okay? And then the last one is E, and that's LIF. It means I'll do it if I like. And if I am doing things that I don't like, it would warp my integrity. And the view is all about freedom, autonomy. So your wheel should be A is TEK, technology, expertise, and knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
B zone is challenge, advancement, and power. C zone is the professor who actualized and doing it out of love. Okay? D zone is credibility, abundance, and trust. And E zone is like, and then I'll do it if I like. If I like it, I do it. And integrity and freedom. LIF. That corresponds to that wedding cake. Go over to the wedding cake, and you see rapport is based on engagement and integrity. That is the LIF. You got it? Honesty,
yep.
Transparency, innovation. We're all one. The icing is going to represent credibility and trust and abundance, as in compensation. And if you ever look at the back of a dollar bill that says, "In God we trust," trust is a flow, like currency. You don't do business with people you don't trust. And you can feel if you trust them or not, right?
Yes.
So the more trusting relationships and business you have, generally speaking, the more money and fair it is, right?
Right.
So it corresponds. You see how that worked?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now go to the wedding cake and turn the PAL, the professor who likes to actualize and love, right? He's the manager who likes to give him back. He's and go to the top rectangle in that wedding cake and call that work delight. Work delight is based on I actually love going to work because I'm going over there healing and empowering people. Got that?
Mm-hmm.
And then right beneath that is correlating to the challenge, advancement, and power, and that would be advancement. What's your opportunity for advancement within that company? And then obviously the what we just did was TEK, which means technology growth imaging size of the company you worked at, right?
Right.
Now you give that a 44%. You got it?
Mm-hmm.
Now let's go up to the TDS place of work, and you say, what was my opportunity for advancement there? On a scale of 0 to 4, not 0 to 5, well, everyone average should get a significant advancement every 4 years. If they're not, it's going to be like a 1. So you looked at, you were in a place that had spiral flow, which creates chaos and crisis, right? Like
mm-hmm.
a dwindling spiral, kind of like a ship on the cotton whirlpool. You got it? Everyone
yep.
talking in spirals creates that chaos, and that actually it's crisis. And there's very little chances for advancement because there's a lot of politics and a lot of hidden agendas and you've got to watch your back kind of feeling there. Got it?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what you'd get there. So you'd have to probably give it on a scale of 0 to 4. What was your opportunity for advancement there on a scale of 0 to 4?
Minimal. I wouldn't give it more than a 1.
Give it a 1.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, work the light. This is something that you bring to work. Now, not much you can do about the advancement. Very little one person can do about the score of the company as a whole in terms of its technology growth, image, and size. But you, your heart, we're talking about love. Were you looking at the clock? Or did you kind of get like, you know, on a scale of 0 to 3 on this one? Thomas Edison in the basement. He's above the space and time and the artist and genius. He doesn't want to get out of there. He loves it. 1.5 is your average person. And, you know, they're not looking at the clock. But, you know, they kind of feel it's time to go home, and they look up, oh, shucks, man, it's 5:30. They almost forgot, right? That's like a 1.5. You got that?
Mm-hmm.
Or you could be the person that's down the machinations of the machinery, and, you know, you're always looking at the clock, and I can't wait to get out of here. The work light score would be like a 0.5. You got it?
Mm-hmm.
So scale yourself at TDS on the scale of 0 to 3.
2.25.
Good. Put a 2.25 in there. Okay. Compensation. If you were the president, could you replace yourself for the same amount of money? Or would you have to pay more in terms of just being a market? Don't think about what you did. Just think about replacing yourself. Did you think you were 10% underpaid? 10% overpaid?
20% under.
Be the president in the economy. Could you have got out and got recruiters and put advertisements in there and found somebody to do the, and just, you know, place that position just to get the body at the same amount?
Yeah, probably.
So probably like 10% underpaid when you take your viewpoint and the macro picture, right?
Yeah.
I understand. These things have ratios. Okay, so you got like a 1, and then you got a 2.2 for your C zone, and then you got a 0.9 for your D zone. Rapport, engagement, honesty, transparency. If you own your own company and you're the only employee, you don't have any hidden agendas. That's a 1. That's not the way it is there. 0.8 is when you're working with a lot of movers and shakers, highly innovative, pedestaling. It's okay to say whatever you want to say. Everyone's trying to mentor and bring everything up to the surface so we can all figure it out. No one takes it personal. Got it?
Yeah.
0.6 is when it's a little bit above average. You know, I won't say that you're friends, but, you know, it doesn't feel murky as an average. 0.5 is average. You know, there's some hidden agendas and, you know, politics and things of this nature. 0.4 is when you know it is spiral. 0.3 is when you got to watch your back. 0.2 is you're going to get it. 0.1 is everyone's stuck like a deer in the headlights. Take a look at that communication flow over there. And what was it on that scale? Was it like a 0.4?
0.25.
Woo. That's rough.
Yep.
That means people were really concerned about getting in the back, weren't they?
It was constant eggshells. You were forever...
Okay, that's going to be peril. That's in the lowest ends of crisis, almost peril. So it's spiral and stuck. Okay, cool. Now, I'm going to give you some scores and some percentages. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
All right. take your A, that's 2.2, that equals 44%. Take your B at 1 out of 0 to 4, that's 25%. Take your C, that's 2.2, that's 73.3%. Take your compensation at 0.9, that's going to give you, it's weird, I'll explain it to you later, but it's 60%. It's based on the carrot and the stick, okay?
Mm-hmm.
67 would be a 1. Means two-thirds that stick is out. In other words, like if you're playing a game, if you have two-thirds chance of winning, then you're going to give it all you got. Less than that, then you give up and you don't even reach for the carrot. So if I say a 0 to 2 on the compensation and you say 1, it doesn't equal 50%, it equals 67%. So 0.9 is going to give you 60%, okay?
Okay.
And 0.25 is going to give you 25%. You have two scores in here that are the same, and that would be B and E. That means advancement opportunities, and your rapport score came in at 25% apiece. You got that? We've got to split hairs here. If a recruiter could get you out of there, was it because you wanted more rapport or more advancement? More transparency. Okay. So I'm going to take your score up just a notch on E. Instead of giving it a 1, I mean, instead of giving it a 0.25, I'm going to give it a 0.26, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm going to give this 1.1, okay? Excuse me. I'm sorry. You said it was going to give a 0.25, I'm going to give it a 0.26 instead of a 0.25, okay?
Okay.
That's going to give it a 26%. You got that?
I do.
Awesome. So you got a 44%, a 25%, a 73%, a 60%, and a 26%. You put all these together, and it totals a 6.56 out of a possible 15. You take 6.56, divided by a possible 15, and you know what that equals? It equals 43.
Just less than half.
43.7, which is back to that lens radius thing that you drew. So when I asked you that question, that impression question, and it came out at 45, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Now you're starting to understand this mirror effect.
Mm-hmm.
See how simple it is, but we're complicating enough, it's there. That's not you. But it's stuck on you as an impression of you. You got it?
Got it.
This is clearing. This is life energy clearing. Anything that's unwanted yet thoroughly viewed, you know it's not you, release it, because it affects your experience of how you view. Get the sand out of your lens so you can flow bigger. And it's kind of like a slime or a film. You ever seen that Claritin commercial and it says all of a sudden, you know, they peel that strip off and everything's brighter now?
Yes.
Hopefully you're getting the feeling that that is not you and that you're flowing bigger. And you're saying, you know what, that's not me. That's not me at all. That was all that group think and all that behavior, all that organizational behavior, and it slimed me in how I view myself. Get it?
Mm-hmm.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Is like a little light coming on?
It is.
Like, hey, that's not me. That was those people. Cool. So, what you end up with is, I want you to do some stacking sequences. Down there in that battery, now this is cool. Now, remember that thing that I had to draw, that the rectangle with 15 windows, or 3 windows and 5 apiece?
Yes.
On the go down there, and we're going to look at that as a battery. What's behind that bulb is a battery, the potential, you got it?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reactive, which means, you know, things you can't see. You know, root cause, you got to peel the carpet back and get to the root, right? I'm going to get you to see something that's been affecting how you view things and how you flow things. And it is a motivation sequence called reactive. And you don't want to approach life reactively, okay?
Excuse me.
That's okay. You put in the rectangle in the top left window.
Okay.
Put a B. Then an E. Beneath that, then an A, then a D, and then a C. You have a B, E, A, D, C.
Mm-hmm.
Got it? What does that mean? That means your shopping list. If you're going to go to the grocery store, you look inside your refrigerator, you're out of advancement. So you go to a interview, and you're going to want to go to a place where you can advance. That's what that means. Then you're going to want a place that has more rapport. Then you're going to want to go to a place that's more secure. Then it's about the money and the opportunity to give back. Does that make sense? Because it's a stacking sequence of what you lack and what you lack. Now, don't be surprised when you look at that sequence and patterns. And these are patterns, okay? Mm-hmm. Look at that. Don't be surprised at any place you ever worked at. That sequence popped up as to why you no longer work there. There was an opportunity for enough challenges for me. Thus, I wasn't able to advance. There was some politics above my head. I couldn't seem to get past. Thus, I couldn't advance, which made me feel less about our rapport. But that wasn't just you. That was what was going on there for everyone. And what was going on inside you. Thus, the place lost security for some form or fashion. But anyway, that BE thing is probably popular. Don't be surprised you see that in the patterns of your resume.
Hmm.
Is that making sense? It was about advancement and rapport. And then because of lack of advancement and rapport, because when you advance as a love, because you know you get these high scores of love and management, the reason why you wanted to advance is because that way you can go up there and empower and communicate better and change it to where it would be more secure, right?
Yes.
Yeah, the reason why you want advancement is because you want to share more love, how to teach people how to make a difference and make the place more secure and growing more, right? Bring in new technology. See, that's why you wanted advancement, because you're a instructor. You're a person who was doing it out of love. So you didn't get the advancement, so you couldn't make the needed changes, and that affected, there's a lot of politics involved there, right?
Mm-hmm.
You weren't acknowledged. You didn't even advance. It affected the transparency and, it affected rapport, right? Anyway, there's some patterns in there if you look at it. Are you looking at it?
I am.
It's one way of looking at it. Now, let's go to how you would hire people. Now, look at those five things, okay? One's expertise mode. Now, you know you have all five things in you. You're equally, your talents, those five golden nuggets, are within everybody. You understand that?
Yes.
Honesty is within people, right? Our integrity, right? Our money motivated, or I want to give back and make a difference, you know, that love and actualization stuff, right? That work the right thing. And there's also the desire to advance within everybody, and there's also this desire for security and picking up tools and becoming an expert, right?
Yeah.
That's in everybody, isn't it? Those five are within everyone. Now, you own your own business. Pretend you're going to hire your first person. The first person you hire, what golden nugget, and since we have all five, do you want to be shining the brightest? Honesty in them? Or they want for money, or that they want to give back, or that they want to advance, or that they want security to become an expert. They have all five, but which one? And you just stack it in a sequence in terms of what's most important to you when you hire people. Integrity, or their want for abundance, or their want for actualization.
No, the integrity.
All right, so put an E on the top right.
Okay.
Of your matrix over there. This is the positive side of your battery. This is the authentic. Now that you know that you have transparency with the person and they are all about embracing integrity, what's the next thing?
Money.
You want them to want money? Well, they're going to leave you in a heartbeat. No, I'm asking you. They're wanting for money. Now, you own your own company. You got it?
I looked at it as if what they want is money and success, then they're going to work harder at what they're doing.
That's fine.
There's
a D up there. That's fine with me. Put a D underneath it. Okay. Now what's next? You want to be one that wants to actualize people and empower people and love them and teach? Or do you want them to be advancement motivated and kind of, you know, a bit political? Or do you want them to be security motivated and not pick up as many tools as I possibly can?
Security.
Okay, so put a that means they're going to be kind of thinking about, right, it's put a C there. I mean, A. So you have a, what's called a EDA. You got it? EDA. Now do you want to be a, you should have a EDA.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what's next? You're going to be, I want to give back and teach
yes.
people. Okay, then put a C, and then that leaves you an A. You got that?
No, he had EDA, and then C,
mm-hmm.
and then B.
Yep.
Okay, got it.
Now, look at that. That's what's behind the bulb. That's the battery. That's what's causing the dichotomy. All right. That dichotomy there means that you're opposed between two, you're sandwiched between two opposing certainties. We're going to go ahead and wrap up the show here, and I'm going to go ahead and finish this offline. This has been Search for Calling. This is Ken Payne with Jay Moore and Karen McCrudden. Appreciate your time, and hope you have a good day. We're going to continue Will Tell Solutions with our next Sunday. Thank you very much.